Our next case for this morning is Digitech Computer against Transcare.
May it please the court, my name is Mark Hassler. I represent Transcare, Inc. This case raises the question of whether a seller can induce a buyer to purchase its product through the promise of a satisfaction guaranteed warranty and then avoid the implementation of that warranty through the use of a non-integrated sales agreement that makes no reference to the satisfaction guaranteed warranty.
But why isn't this case better characterized as something that raises the question, kind of pretty standard question, is there a contract between the parties? Was something ever entered into? I think that's pretty clearly yes. And if so, what terms made it into the contract? Whether or not there's an integration clause, you still have to ask that very fundamental question about contracts. And it happens commonly that people will discuss possibilities for a contract that don't make it into the final agreement.
Well, actually, Your Honor, we believe that there are two alternative causes of action here. One is, did the warranty make it into the purchase agreement, or should the warranty be interpreted as being within the purchase agreement? But the second action is the fraud action, which the court removed on summary judgment, and specifically the claim that Transcare was fraud in the inducement of this transaction, and by that, Transcare was then induced to enter into an agreement when we had this very clear 90-day satisfaction guaranteed warranty presented to Transcare early on in the transaction.
Well, tell me this then. What distinguishes your case from any of a myriad of contract cases where the parties start out with tentative proposals, maybe one that's a very attractive proposal, but somehow in the process of negotiation it gets changed or modified, perhaps in exchange for something else that's valuable, and the final contract doesn't include that very attractive thing that the party was starting out with? It includes other things. So I'm worried that you're turning every contract case into a fraud in the inducement case whenever something attractive gets dropped during the process of negotiation.
Judge Wood, I think the response to that is the strength in which Digitech advanced to Transcare that this 90-day satisfaction guaranteed warranty would be in place. In fact,
but then when you read the written contract, it wasn't there. I mean, why doesn't somebody speak up at that point and say, gee, you know, we're about to sign this agreement. What happened to the 90-day walkout provision?
Well, once again, I think you need to look at the formal proposal.
Well, it wasn't a take-it-or-leave-it contract. Your client negotiated certain terms, didn't it? It said, well, where are these things, or could you put these things in? There was some back and forth, wasn't there?
Yes, there was, Your Honor.
And during the course of that, there was no mention of where's our 90-day money-back guarantee.
There was no mention of that, but there was also no mention of the fact by Digitech that we're taking the 90-day satisfaction guaranteed warranty off the table.
Yeah, but somebody, don't you think you were the ones that wanted it? I mean, there could have been some reference, even if you didn't have it spelled out, because everything was spelled out in the first proposal, like you said, just a line on the 18-page because it was an 18-page purchase license agreement that just said, and we include that satisfaction guarantee provision.
Well, I think there's two responses to that. Once again, the formal proposal does not just talk about the 90-day satisfaction guaranteed warranty. It also states that that is a policy of Digitech. I guess when a company says we're only happy when our customers are happy, and this policy, company policy, ensures, and this company policy ensures your complete satisfaction. So first of all, TransCare was going into this having been told that Digitech has a company policy.
But can't policies change?
Well, if
you would feel comfortable just because the policy at the time is this, but policies can change. You know, if you want to make sure it applies, shouldn't you make it binding?
Well, I would think that if a policy were to change, then Digitech would have the duty to tell TransCare we've changed our policy.
But why isn't the fact that in the written contract there's a section called termination, and this isn't in there? I mean, I just wonder how clearly do they have to say so? It seems to me it's a pretty, from your point of view, it's a pretty glaring omission.
Well, I think there's also, I know there's also a provision in the agreement that says that the agreement incorporates the prior documentation and specifications that have been provided to TransCare by Digitech. And there was precious little documentation provided by this company to TransCare. In fact, the formal proposal is really the best source of the specifications and details.
It doesn't say prior. It says, and the specifications and documentation supplied by Digitech in all material respects. So just to be accurate about it.
That's correct, Your Honor. But bear in mind, this was also an agreement that was drafted by Digitech, which means that the inferences need to be drawn against it. And I would submit that that language, when it talks about the documentation provided by Digitech, almost has to relate to those prior documents that was submitted to TransCare during the negotiation process.
Is it your position that every item in Digitech's first proposal is incorporated into the purchase order because the first proposal was attached to the purchase order?
It's my position that the first proposal provisions are incorporated into the contract, not necessarily by the purchase agreement, but by the contractual provision that Digitech wrote that says that their specifications and documentation are included within the contract.
I'm very confused by that. I thought you were making a big deal about the fact that this thing was attached to the purchase order.
Well, I think that shows or should have shown to Digitech that was the expectation of TransCare. To be candid with you, that purchase order is not signed by Digitech. But I think the most stronger argument is that the formal proposal, I believe, was incorporated into the agreement through this language. I would also note that there was no such policy, even though it was represented to TransCare that a policy existed of a satisfaction guaranteed warranty, because this was the first time that Digitech had ever offered a satisfaction guaranteed warranty to a customer. I believe they have approximately 54 customers. The undisputed evidence is that they never informed TransCare that they had never offered such a warranty before.
That may well be, but you have to get over the a fairly high hurdle, which is to characterize these favorable statements or to characterize Digitech's course of dealing as actual fraud as opposed to just, you know, puffery or nice things that they say before they settle down to the serious negotiations. You know, your client was also negotiating, and obviously everybody started out with high expectations that were not realized, but to call this fraud is a very big step to take.
And particularly, did your people ask, is this the first time you've offered it, or ask how long has this policy been in place? Wasn't there some obligation on your client's part to get that clarified?
I don't believe when a seller makes a written representation that this is their policy.
But it's just in a negotiating document. You're not saying that the initial proposal was a contract separate and apart from the later contract, the May contract.
No, but I don't think it's unreasonable for TransCare to have accepted those statements contained within the formal proposal as being truthful and correct.
Well,
and
there you get back to my other question. So now you're saying that during the course of negotiations, I guess your position is if there's no integration clause, every word said by either party somehow should be understood as part of the agreement.
No. My argument is that where there is no integration clause and that there is a provision within the agreement, and I believe that it is contained at, I believe, Section 3A of the agreement, that talks about including the specifications and documentation.
Specifications and documents. Why isn't that phrase rationally understood to mean, you know, the kind of software and the kind of manuals that go along with the software and perhaps even the training that goes along with it? Specifications and documentation supplied by Digitech. The word supply doesn't necessarily invoke ideas of a 90-day free trial period.
But if you look at the formal proposal of February 3, it is, in fact, a statement of specifications and functions. It talks about the call-taking ability of the software.
But I thought almost all of this was repeated in Rider A of the purchase of the agreement.
Now, only a small portion of it was included within Rider A.
So are you arguing that there was acceptance by performance of these provisions? Are you going back to an argument where it is important that this was stapled to the purchase order?
Well, I think that has importance, but
you didn't argue that in your brief, that there had been acceptance by performance.
No, I'm not arguing that. I think the purchase order has some importance, but again, I think the most important aspect of this is the language of Section 3A that speaks of the documentation and specifications provided to TransCare by Digitech. Remember, Digitech could have very easily have quelched this whole idea of the 90-day satisfaction guaranteed warranty by putting an integration clause in or specifically saying that that warranty no longer existed.
But, you know, I'm reading this initial proposal. It just doesn't sound like the kind of specification documentation. The first thing on call taking just says fast, creates trip legs instantly, reducing time to dispatch calls and improve response time. That's very vague language. That doesn't say anything about what kind of computer program you're having. It's saying we're going to do a good job.
Well,
universal search for quick database lookup.
Well, I agree. It may not be the most concise statement of what this software program can do.
It's not.
Sounds like a sales pitch.
Yes,
and then
exactly.
After the pitch is made, and if you're the buyer, you work out what the details
right.
are, which is what the contract became.
Well, everyone has agreed this is a proposal, not a sales pitch. And I think that there are provisions of it that are very specific. For example, the provisions that talk about the HIPAA compliance of this software, the billing features, and then once again you get right back to the satisfaction guaranteed. And again, I can't stress the fact that it's not just a statement. It states that that is a policy of this company. And I think that that's important for two reasons. The first reason is we go beyond just puffery and saying hey, we have this a satisfaction guaranteed warranty. This is a company says it's their policy. And the second reason that's important is because that was false, because they had no such policy. Or at
you
least
you knew that the minute you signed the contract, because you signed a contract that said in black and white there were certain ways that the contract could be terminated. And it actually had payment provisions, you know, which we will probably get to on another part of your case, that said there's going to be a start date, all caps, and your obligation to pay started actually 90 days after the start. I mean, there are all kinds of things built into this contract. And so they may have told you initially there was a policy, but by the time you signed the contract, you saw how that was getting put in place in real terms for you. I mean, the 90-day forgiveness.
We had no way of knowing that was, in fact, not included, because Digitech had never told us.
Everything is included except those things that are excluded, philosophy of contract?
No, I have a philosophy that if a company states that it has a policy, for example, does a company incorporate every one of its policies within its sales contracts? Definitely not. But when a representation is made that a company has a policy.
Can you cite me a breach of contract case from Indiana that allows somebody to recover because a policy wasn't followed, even though that's not actually reproduced in the contract?
I cannot cite you a case such as that. I can cite you a case from 1916, and that is the, I believe it's the
1916.
Martin versus Shube case, which, interestingly enough, though, has a scenario that's very similar to this case, with the exception that instead of dealing with computer software, we're dealing with the sale of a stallion. But in any event, there Indiana said that a warranty such as this would allow for a representation of a warranty such as this would allow for a fraud claim even if that warranty was not included within the contract itself.
Okay, if you'd like to save any rebuttal time, this might be.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lind.
Your Honors, Jeff Lind for Digitech. This is a contract case.
Mr. Lind, I have a question for you about the contract.
Sure.
Looking at, if I'm remembering correctly, in the rider, Part 8, paragraph capital B, it talks about when the obligation to pay commences, and it's defined in terms of the start date, which is itself defined as the time when all the software has properly been delivered, and then it actually says there'll be 90 days during which the payment obligation is not triggered yet, and then from that point onward there's a payment obligation. So by my math, this contract was signed in May of 2006. The go-live date was January 1st, 2007, and the contract was to run for 3 years. So I come up with something like 25 months where payment was due, not the 33 months that the district court. In other words, there was the parties to this contract, you've got to take the good with the bad, basically. The parties to this contract contemplated that during the first few months, Digitech would be undertaking steps to enable to happen. And so you weren't going to get a 36-month payment stream or even a 33-month payment stream. You were going to get that minus the time that it was necessary for you to get up and running. So if you were very fast and you got up and running in 1 month, it would have been a very early start date. In fact, it turns out to be January. So why isn't that just reversible error?
Well, the point on the court's view of it was it's a three-year contract.
With a date. There was a defined start date for this three-year contract.
The other point I want to make, when you say January was the go-live date, in August the software was installed. And at the end of...
Oh, I mean, there might be some fact-finding that has to be done, but the district court seems to have thought that all it had to do was subtract out the 90 days. That's the 3 months. That's the difference between 36 months and 33, and that you were entitled to payment for the full 33. And I have looked at this contract a lot, and I just cannot make it say that.
I can understand your position. I can't. I think.
What's your defense for your position?
Well, my point is it was the judge who established the damages in this matter.
And now we're reviewing that.
Sure.
So you've got to give us a reason why we need to agree with you.
Well,
bottom line.
Sure. That is nothing more than it was a 3-year contract, and the only forgiven fees are the 3 months. And when that's how the math came out. I mean, that is the only defense, that it's a 3-year contract and only 3 months were free.
All right. So if that's what you have to say about that, we will take that back.
Look, and I'm also curious about this lockout then as of, I think, April of 2007.
Sure.
The software's useless from that point on.
Well,
and also you're not really providing anything after April of 2007, no response to questions or anything. There's no cost to your client from that point on.
And since we're on a lockout, can you also add, you know, with this 90-day lockout, doesn't that prove you intended a 90-day evaluation period? So you were abiding by that satisfaction guarantee.
No, there is no connection in that particular instance. In Section 2, I think it's C, D, and E on pages 1 and 2 of the contract that deals with the payment and what happens when Transcare does not pay. Digitech could, after, if 60 days had gone by and there had been no payment, they could suspend Transcare's access to the software. And they did that. That was the option that was selected after they were not paid for 60 days. They weren't paid for January and February, and there were customizations that weren't paid that had occurred even before January. The contract goes on to say in 2, I think it's C, D, and E, that the contractual obligations of TransCare during the suspension continue. And if they want to end the suspension, they need to come current with their obligations under the contract.
But what happens, actually, I think you're focusing on subpart E. What happens, though, is Digitech essentially declares the contract over, or it certainly looks like that's what they've done. So it's almost an anticipatory breach position that you've taken, that TransCare has announced that they're not going, that they're out of this contract. And so I'm concerned about the measure of damages for any kind of anticipatory breach. Let's suppose that's correct. But the measure of damages isn't necessarily just the monthly payments out to the end of the contract. There's a whole lot of law about measure of damages for anticipatory breach. And, you know, we don't know what profits Digitech was anticipating, whether they were reasonable, whether there were alternatives that Digitech was now able to take advantage of because it wasn't doing trend. There's a lot that we don't know about this.
Well, just to clarify a point, the notice of and then subsequent suspension from access to the program occurred after TransCare terminated the relationship.
Correct. And so now Digitech writes to TransCare and effectively says, well, we're terminating the agreement.
Well, no, they weren't. I mean, they could terminate the agreement. That was one of their options. But their other option was to suspend TransCare's access until Digitech was paid. And that's what we're talking about here, was the suspension of access.
So what if this had been, I mean, there's a very bad windfall feel about this, because you get to sit there and just collect money from TransCare, knowing that TransCare is never going to ask for another minute of Digitech's software. Can't. I mean, it's been locked out from it. It's like, you know, closing down a toll bridge and then charging somebody to keep walking across the bridge, even though you've put up a big concrete barricade.
The largest devotion of time, energy, and effort was in the early portions.
Sure, and so maybe if the contract had been breached, you would have come in and said, you know, here are the damages we've suffered from this breach of contract, and there could have been evidence about the time that was invested to tailor the software for TransCare's needs and evidence along those lines. We don't see that, and so you're almost arguing that this is a liquidated damages provision, but you don't call it that in the contract.
The contract simply says that they remain liable. They could have regained access to the software by simply coming current and asking. And at trial, it was asked of TransCare's Farrell Ward, did you think about picking up the phone and calling Digitech to get access? And his answer was, that wasn't my decision. They just pick up the phone, come current, and it says right in the contract what they need to do to get their access unsuspended.
But all I'm saying is, suppose, as I believe you did, you took the position that as of the date you received the letter from TransCare purporting to exercise this 90-day walk-away option that we've all been discussing, even if that letter is insufficient, as the magistrate judge held under the termination paragraph of the contract, it would certainly be enough, apparently, for Digitech to say TransCare has now breached. TransCare has said they're not going to pay us anymore. They've repudiated the contract. At the moment of breach, there is a question under contract law about what's the proper measure of damages for the breach. And you're jumping to the conclusion that the proper measure of damages is the remainder of payments under the contract. But there is no contract anymore once it's been breached. So I don't know why that's necessarily the proper measure of damages.
Well, at that point, from Digitech's perspective, they simply were not paying. This letter...
So there's breach. And TransCare says, we don't want your stuff anymore. We just want access long enough to pull our data out. That's what the letter says. Right?
I don't have it in front of you, but I don't doubt your word.
Well, that's what I read in the record, so I just don't know why you're not, you know, it does seem to me, and the lockout is consistent with this too, that Digitech took the position that this contract was done. It was breached.
Well, their contract provides, and they were not going to allow TransCare to continue to have access until they came current with the payments under the contract. That is the position that Digitech took.
Did Digitech communicate to TransCare that it was prepared at any moment to flip the switch and restore the access?
There was attempts on Digitech's part to communicate with TransCare that were unsuccessful.
How can that be? Well, you can always write a letter.
They made attempts to try to communicate on how can we work this out, where do you want to go from here?
Did you ever say what I just recited? Is there ever a letter that says, you know, sorry we've come to an impasse and we've had to lock down the software, but the minute you bring your payments current, we'll turn it back on again?
I don't know that conversation ever took place after March of 2007.
So why isn't TransCare at that point then entitled to conclude from your behavior that it's really a permanent lockout? It's not. I mean, they're not mind readers. They don't know that you're ready to turn it back on again.
They know that information is theirs. Digitech, in the contract itself, the information that's entered into that program is the property of TransCare. If they want it, simply call.
Digitech. Well, you're saying that, but I don't know where that's so clear. I mean, you've...
it's clear.
You're trying to make this contract both breached and not breached at the same time.
So was there an email message sent? Was there a phone message left? There was no letter, so we know there's no letter.
I don't.
You told Judge Wood. So was there an email sent? Was there a voicemail left? Was there anything?
On the topic that you can regain access?
Right.
I do not believe there was.
So when you say communication, what do you mean? Was communicated that they knew.
Pardon me?
What do you mean then? There's no letter, there's no phone call, there's no email. So how was this information communicated? We know your info is in there. All you have to do is get current and we can pull the stuff out.
That's in the contract. That is the part of the obligations that my client, Digitech, needs to live up.
It's just in the original agreement.
Yes.
And you also knew that TransCare thought the original agreement was over. Do you ever tell them we think the agreement is still in force?
Why, sure. Yeah, I mean, the attempts, the communications after this termination, attempt to terminate was sent, this March 1st letter from TransCare, where do we go from here, and do you want to try to work this out? Those were the communications that were made.
So what did you recite to me, since I don't have this committed to memory, what was said in response to the TransCare letter, I'll say, purporting to exercise the 90-day option?
I do not have it committed to memory, but there was an email from Mark Shiewicz to Russ Farrell wherein he asked, come on, are you really? I mean, what can we do to work this out? What can we do to cure? And from there, Digitech attempted to try to encourage negotiations on how to work this out. I wanted to touch briefly on the Martin versus Schaub. TransCare, in its reply brief, seemed to claim that Martin held that a warranty, an oral warranty, was the basis of a fraud action. As I read the Martin case, it actually stands for the proposition that in order to be actionable, a warranty has to be physically part of the contract. But what Martin, the party, actually said in that 1916 case was actionable as fraud. He made a misrepresentation of existing fact, which was the basis for the fraud action in that 1916 case, which is differentiated from what we have here, is the discussion of a potential contract term. There was no statement of existing fact.
All right, so if I go to a Hyundai dealer and I'm talking about possibly buying a car, and the Hyundai dealer tells me we have a 100,000-mile powertrain warranty on the car, and I say, oh, that's interesting, and then I go across the street to a Ford dealer, and the Ford dealer tells me we have an 80,000-mile powertrain warranty or mileage on the car. Is it your position these warranties are not part of my contract because the car hasn't been driven 80,000 or 100,000 miles yet?
Well, that is not the case we have.
But it is. I'm asking you about warranties.
You would get that warranty when you walked out of the dealership.
And it says we're warranting the car for whichever number of miles. Maybe the Ford is cheaper and I decide that I'll take a shorter warranty, or maybe I like the long warranty. But warranties are common parts of commercial transactions. So why isn't this similar in your case?
The fact that
your software is warranted to work.
The warranty issues were decided at trial in Digitech's favor and have not been appealed. The software worked. The discussion about whether or not they could just say the word and walk was a potential termination without cause provision, and that simply did not make it into the contract. It was mentioned very early.
You make the argument that that's inconsistent with the other termination provisions, and that doesn't seem at all the case to me. It looks like had it made it into the contract, hypothetically, There would have been an initial period, almost a probationary period, that often happens. And then once the probationary period is over, the other termination provisions would kick in. It was a 3-year contract. It wasn't a 120-day contract. So I don't see why they couldn't live pretty comfortably side by side.
Well, I guess my point is that the contract contained very clearly identified termination provisions. Clearly marked in the contract.
But why isn't this almost more like a probationary period? It's not so much termination as when does this contract really get up and running in earnest?
Well, that really up and running in earnest was dealt with in that period between installation and the go-live date. You made reference to it earlier. That's the time they had to look at the program. That's when they were to be using it and testing it and trying it.
They couldn't have terminated the contract then without paying for the rest of the 3 years anyway.
It is my position that this provision that was mentioned early on in negotiations was not incorporated into the contract. That's true. But at trial was argued, and in summary judgment argued, that even if this thing had been incorporated into the contract, they had their 90 days to look at it from the date of installation until, and they actually had more than 90 days.
Well, this kind of comes back to Judge Williams' question earlier about that lockout provision built into the software. Doesn't that suggest that the satisfaction guarantee was really part of your agreement?
Mr. Hassler made that point.
It's as though you gave them software that would work for 90 days, and then it would lock out.
Mr. Hassler made that connection, but that is tied to the provision that if you're not paying us, it's not going to instantly reignite. These things are set on, I think it was 60-day periods, that if they hadn't paid. If they had paid, someone at Digitech would go in and manually remove that switch so that they would continue to have the use of it. But if no payment had been received within 60 days, they weren't going to be allowed access anymore.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Hassler?
I believe that the lockout issue is the most important issue on the damages aspect of this case, because basically from 90 days after this after the software was implemented, TransCare had no way to access this software. And I cannot help but believe that there is some kind of a connection or an incredible coincidence that we're talking about a 90-day satisfaction guaranteed warranty, and on the 90th or approximately the 90th day, the software is locked out and TransCare can no longer access it.
But what payments had TransCare made to Digitech as of that time?
TransCare had made some of the payments for the customized programming. I believe it was TransCare's position that the 90 days of free service really didn't start until the program was actually implemented and went live on January 1.
Okay, but I'm just wondering, aside from perhaps some incidental payments, am I right that it was something like $2,900 a month that the contract?
It was $2,200 because Digitech could never get its electronic patient transfer.
All right. So there was a specified amount per month. But my biggest question for you is, TransCare writes a letter to Digitech under the impression that the 90-day free out still exists. And I'd like to hear from you. What response did you get from Digitech? And did you ever say to Digitech, let's maybe escrow the payments, let's do something, let's find a way that we can keep this arrangement going?
Well, the response that we received from Digitech was that TransCare was in breach of the agreement, that there was no 90-day satisfaction guaranteed warranty, that there was a 90-day for cause provision.
Not been specific enough about cause.
Not been specific enough. And then on July 23, 2007, which is less than 4 months after TransCare was locked out of this software, Digitech filed suit for all the payments due and owing under this agreement, including what it viewed as 33 monthly payments. And I might note that this contract, I looked through it this morning, I don't see where the number of payments is ever specified in the contract. It talks about a monthly contract amount, but it doesn't say you have to pay 36 or 33 payments. It only talks about the monthly payment amount, and it talks about the fact that this is a 3-year contract. And if, well, Your Honor, that's my time is up. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.